past circumstances from guilty, law and justice blind. The history of magical love.
You're listening to CPR, that's CFRC's prison radio program that airs every Wednesday night on your local campus and community radio dial or streaming online at cfrc.ca from 7 until 8 p.m. It's the start of the month for us. We weren't here, well, we were here last Wednesday, but it was in September. Normally we would do Stark Raving on the first week of the month, but we've got some special programming today that's very time sensitive, and we want to get it out there for anyone listening. We broadcast, as I said, every Wednesday to all the institutions in the Kingston area, although I understand that there's still some reception problems at Bath Institution. I don't know why, but if you'd like to get a hold of us, because we are here, we are looking to get letters and emails, the easiest way to get a hold of us is to write us CPR, Calls from Home, care of CFRC. We're in Lower Carruthers Hall here on Queen's University campus in Kingston, Ontario. K is in Kevin, 7, L is in Lenore, 3, N is in Nancy, 6. That's K, 7, L, 3, and 6. Write to us there, Calls from Home, CPR. Just write it to CFRC. We'll read it and hopefully put it on the air and write you back. If you have access to the internet, you can write to us at cfrcprisonradio@riseup.net. Or you can visit our Calls from Home Facebook group and ask to join. We had a dozen new people join around Prisoners Justice Day, and we got a couple of requests through there. We've had people just email or Facebook our Facebook page, CFRC's Facebook page. If you have access to a phone number, we would love if you phone our office line, 533-2121. We're not going to open up the request line tonight because we won't have time, but it's 533-2372. At the end of every month, we do Calls from Home, and we'll take requests live in the air at that time. And we're hoping to bring back our toll-free number soon. That's one of the plans for the show moving forward. I'm the semi-regular voice of CPR, C, and I'm joined by a new contributor, a former contributor in some ways. You've helped with the show a lot before, but Rico is here in the studios with me. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm happy to have someone else in here with me. It can be lonely doing this show when there's so many listeners, but not as many people on the mic. And Rico's put together a lot of material for today's broadcast because we've got some pretty big stuff that's going to go down in a few days across U.S. prisons. We're trying to carry the message of those planners and strikers and organizers to Canada. So what is the special anniversary and the circumstances of this event that we're going to be talking about throughout the hour?
Well, there's been a call that's been put out by prisoners across the U.S., many of who are involved with a new organization called the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee, which is affiliated with the Industrial Workers of the Union, or sorry, Industrial Workers of the World, the IWW, which is a grassroots union across the world. And they are calling for an end to prison slavery. So they consciously see their incarceration and the conditions of labor specifically during their incarceration as an extension of the slave system in the United States. And we have some people on the air who are going to talk about that and what people are kind of gearing up for. There's going to be a work stoppage starting on Friday, September 9th. And there's no end date that's been announced yet. So we're going to see what happens. But there's been a lot of buildup across the United States. and a fair amount of putting the word out and trying to prepare as well in Canada. So we're very excited to see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, this is really interesting. The last time there was a countrywide prisoner strike was only a few years ago, after kind of a bunch of pay and benefits were taken away and room and board was increased across the federal prison system. That was in 2014, I think.
Yes, I believe it was in the fall of 2014.
Yeah. So obviously there's a great deal of discontent, rightly so, in the Canadian prison system. I'm hoping this has some resonance as well here. And September 9th is chosen because it is the anniversary of the Attica prison uprising, which is one of the first prison uprisings of the kind of contemporary world that put issues of race and incarceration right at the forefront. There was the uprising at Auburn the year before in upstate New York, which is not all that far away from us. We'll talk about that more as the hour goes on, because I'm the history geek here, so that's kind of my thing. And I'll hopefully talk about some recent books that have come out, because this is, you know, it's interesting that I was first aware of these paradigm shifts in like academic literature, but it's really interesting to see them so readily and so translatably turned into like actual organizing slogans. And that's actually, I think, where it started. And it just, I'm an academic, so you end up reading about it in academia, but it turns out people on the ground have been doing it for way longer and much smarter usually than some of the people I'm reading about. And don't feel bad about the wobbly thing. The first time I ever, I just would see the acronym, the IWW, and I always thought it was International Workers of the World.
I've done that too.
Yeah, and until I actually met some wobblies, they're like, what are you doing? Why are you saying that? I'm like, well, it's in the Internationale. Like, that's not how it works, though. So we're going to start with something. You've got a piece we found elsewhere that we're going to play first.
Yeah, so this is the initial call-out that was put out by anonymous prisoners across the U.S. that's been widely circulated. And there's a group called the Resonance Anarchy Audio Project, which has turned it into an audio recording for radio shows like this.
All right, well, we're going to play it now. So I hope that everyone out there is listening keenly and can get a good signal for us. This is CPR here on CFRC 101.9 FM.
This is a call to end slavery in America. National Prison Strike, September 2016. In one voice, rising from the cells of long-term solitary confinement, echoed in the dormitories and cell blocks from Virginia to Oregon, we prisoners across the United States vow to finally end slavery in 2016. On September 9th of 1971, prisoners took over and shut down Attica, New York State's most notorious prison. On September 9th of 2016, we will begin an action to shut down prisons all across this country. We will not only demand the end to prison slavery, we will end it ourselves by ceasing to be slaves. In the 1970s, the U.S. prison system was crumbling. In Walpole, San Quentin, Soledad, Angola, and many other prisons, people were standing up, fighting, and taking ownership of their lives and bodies back from the plantation prisons. For the last 6 years, we have remembered and renewed that struggle. In the interim, the prisoner population has ballooned, and technologies of control and confinement have developed into the most sophisticated and repressive in world history. The prisons have become more dependent on slavery and torture to maintain their stability. Prisoners are forced to work for little or no pay. That is slavery. The 13th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution maintains a legal exception for continued slavery in U.S. prison. It states, neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, except as a punishment for crime whereof the party shall have been duly convicted, shall exist within the United States. Overseers watch over our every move, and if we do not perform our appointed tasks to their liking, we are punished. They may have replaced the whip with pepper spray, but many of the other torments remain. Isolation, restraint positions, stripping off our clothes and investigating our bodies as though we are animals. Slavery is alive and well in the prison system. but by the end of this year, it won't be anymore. This is a call to end slavery in America. This call goes directly to the slaves themselves. We are not making demands or requests of our captors. We are calling ourselves to action. To every prisoner in every state and federal institution across this land, we call on you to stop being a slave, to let the crops rot in the plantation fields, to go on strike and cease reproducing the institutions of your confinement. This is a call for a nationwide prisoner work stoppage to end prison slavery starting on September 9, 2016. They cannot run these facilities without us. Nonviolent protests, work stoppages, hunger strikes, and other refusals to participate in prison routines and needs have increased in recent years. The 2010 Georgia prison strike, the massive rolling California hunger strikes, the Free Alabama Movement's 2014 work stoppage have gathered the most attention, but they are far from the only demonstrations of prisoner power. Large, sometimes effective hunger strikes have broken out at Ohio State Penitentiary, at Menard Correctional in Illinois, at Red Onion in Virginia, as well as many other prisons. The burgeoning resistance movement is diverse and interconnected, including immigrant detention centers, women's prisons, and juvenile facilities. Last fall, women prisoners at Yuba County Jail in California joined a hunger strike initiated by women held in immigrant detention centers in California, Colorado, and Texas. Prisoners all across the country regularly engage in myriad demonstrations of power on the inside. They have most often done so with convict solidarity, building coalitions across race lines and gang lines to confront the common oppressor. 45 years after Attica, the waves of change are returning to America's prisons. This September, we hope to coordinate and generalize these protests to build them into a single tidal shift that the American prison system cannot ignore or withstand. We hope to end prison slavery by making it impossible, by refusing to be slaves any longer. To achieve this goal, we need support from people on the outside. A prison is an easy lockdown environment, a place of control and confinement where repression is built into every stone wall and chain link, every gesture and routine. When we stand up to these authorities, they come down on us, and the only protection we have is solidarity from the outside. Mass incarceration, whether in private or state-run facilities, is a scheme where slave catchers patrol our neighborhoods and monitor our lives. It requires mass criminalization. Our tribulations on the inside are a tool used to control our families and communities on the outside. Certain Americans live every day under not only the threat of extrajudicial execution, as protests surrounding the deaths of Mike Brown, Tamir Rice, Sandra Bland, and so many others have drawn long overdue attention to, but also under the threat of capture, of being thrown into these plantations, shackled and forced to work. Our protest against prison slavery is a protest against the school-to-prison pipeline, a protest against police terror, a protest against post-release controls. When we abolish slavery, they'll lose much of their incentive to lock up our children. They'll stop building traps to pull back those who they've released. When we remove the economic motive and grease of our forced labor from the U.S. prison system, the entire structure of courts and police, of control and slave catching, must shift to accommodate us as humans rather than slaves. Prison impacts everyone. When we stand up and refuse on September 9, 2016, we need to know our friends, families, and allies on the outside will have our backs. This spring and summer will be seasons of organizing, of spreading the word, building the networks of solidarity, and showing that we're serious in what we're capable of. Step up, stand up, and join us against prison slavery for liberation of all. Find more information, updates, and organizing materials and opportunities at the following websites: supportprisonerresistance.net, freealabamamovement.com, iwoc.noblogs.org. Slavery is alive and well in the prison system, but by the end of this year, it won't be anymore.
This is the place where I take my stand, take my stick and draw a line in the sand, show my hand.
Wow, that was a really great piece and really well read, as you said. Well, we were off the mic, I guess. So, this is CPR here on CFRC 101.9 FM. And just to remind our listeners, what were we listening to right there?
That was a call out put out by prisoners in the United States, distributed in various ways for a indefinite prison strike starting on Friday, this Friday, September 9th, and was recorded and distributed by the Resonance Audio Anarchy Distro. And if you want to find out more of their stuff, you can find them at resonanceaudiodistro.org.
Yeah, that's a... I don't have any comments to add to that. That was really good, and really succinctly lays out kind of the principles here and what really is at stake in the United States and in Canada too. And so we're hoping that that message finds some receptive ears.
Yes, and I'd like to add that there was a group La Solide out of Quebec that was. That has taken that call out and added a sort of introduction, making connections with the Canadian context, talking about the strikes that you mentioned earlier around the Corcan incentive pay cuts and the room and board, as well as the hunger strikes going on in the immigrant detention center in Lindsay, Ontario, which has been a sort of ongoing recurring hunger strike against the indefinite detention of immigrants.
Which I believe only ended recently due to the fact that the people literally, physically could not continue to strike, which is a testament to just how, I don't know what else to say, but that's an indomitable spirit. We had an interview on Prisoner Justice Day related to that as well. Now, do we have a copy of that additional Canadian statement we're going to air, or are we just going to talk about it on the mics here?
I thought that, you know, we could talk about it. It seems to... a lot of that content's going to be covered by other things that we're planning
okay.
today.
All right.
If people do want to get a copy of that, they can go to lasolide.info. That's lasolide.info, and can read it for themselves, and as well as print a version for distribution.
Okay. So we'll mention some of these places at the end of the show as well, I think, just to reiterate there. Why don't we move on to our next segment? So what are we hearing next here?
Well, next up, we have a recorded statement by someone named Sean Swain. So according to his biography, Sean Swain is an anarchist prisoner held hostage by the lawless rogue state calling itself Ohio. You can find out more about him and his writing and his run for presidency in 2016 at seanswain.org. He's a prolific writer and has a regular kind of radio show that's recorded over the telephone. And I think he's put together a really good statement in support of the strike this September 9th, this Friday.
Okay, well, we're going to hear that right now here on CPR on CFRC 101.9 FM. I'm eager to hear this, continuing the great tradition of Eugene Debs. All right.
Prison officials recently placed Sadiq Abdullah Hassan, a death row prisoner at Ohio's Supermax, in segregation. Sadiq was framed as a leader of the Lucasville prison uprising in 1993, but has been a vocal supporter of the September 9th National Prisoner Work Stoppage. His segregation should really come as no surprise, as prison mismanagers have long waged a brutal war on the truth and on captives who tell it. What is disturbing and highly instructive is that Sadiq's segregation didn't originate with the prison warden, but with the FBI. Yeah, the FBI. This further proves something I suspected in 2012 when prison officials segregated me and tortured me for having an ideology. While I was being tortured at a state prison, the FBI was on site. In fact, the FBI assisted by providing the Ohio prison system with training manuals on how to break me. Know where the training manuals were developed? The CIA. The torture tactics that the FBI shared with the state prison officials came straight out of the CIA's counterintelligence and interrogation manual. So let's connect some dots. The FBI and CIA have essentially merged. So all of the dirty, nasty terror that the U.S. used to unleash exclusively overseas can now be employed right here at home. And the metadata collecting snoops reading your emails, who perfected torture and state terror, have state prison wardens on speed dial, giving unthinkable orders to those who run the largest, most sprawling human bondage system in all of human history. This is no conspiracy theory, folks. Conspiracies are kept secret. The architects of this terror state are developing this ultimate control system right in front of your eyes. These enemies of human freedom are not saying, "We don't know what you're talking about." They're saying, "We have Apache attack helicopters, so what are you going to do about it?" They want you to know what they're doing. They want you paralyzed with fear. That makes you predictable. So look, I've been invited to say a few words about why you should support the National Prison Work Stoppage on September 9th. In doing that, I'm not going to rattle off facts and figures about how the criminal justice and correction systems target racial minorities, or how these systems serve to tip the scales in favor of social and political conservatism by neutralizing those who benefit most from radical change. I'm not going to explain how the indiscriminate police shootings of black people is just an outgrowth of this larger program. I'm going to assume that you've been awake and that you've already got a grasp of the painfully obvious. We can also forego moral arguments about lofty principles like equality and fairness and human compassion. Others can make those arguments much better than I can. Instead, I'm going to try to explain why your own naked self-interests are served in supporting the September 9 work stoppage. Let's talk about you. As Edward Snowden revealed, somewhere in a dark government office, a national security creep is thumbing through your emails, listening to your phone calls, scrutinizing the search history on your hard drive. He's sniffing through your intellectual underwear. Do you know where this mass surveillance plan was perfected? My calls have been monitored and recorded since 1991. Hacks in the prison mailroom have been reading my mail for 25 years. So what you now experience is just a more broadly applied, slightly more complicated program of surveillance developed right here in the prison mailroom. Our common enemy knows it would be too expensive to take the entire population to prison. So, instead, they brought the prison to you. They've done studies on how much rule deviant conduct they can deter just through the threat of surveillance, the knowledge that the government is watching and listening. Look around. How many security cameras are pointed at you? Yeah, that was exported from prison too. Again, studies on how much rebellion can be minimized. Riot response, shields and helmets and kettling. All that came from the prison yard to the college commons.
This call is originating from an Ohio correctional facility and may be recorded and monitored.
Rubber bullets, pepper spray cannons, tasers, all used first on prisoners and then perfected on you. Want to speak out against injustice? Want to peacefully demonstrate your concern in a public setting? Yeah, take this work. So thanks to the evolving strategies rolled out from my world into yours, you now live your butchered half-lives with a shotgun pointed directly in your faces. You have the right to shut up, or else. But you don't have the right to a living wage. In the current election cycle, the corporate party candidates bemoan the disappearance of manufacturing and union-scale jobs to other countries, but they don't talk about the jobs that move down the street and over the barbed wire. Ohio prisoners perform slave labor for the Ford Motor Company and Honda for pennies a day, while folks you know are sleeping in their cars. This slavery allows prison officials to run their plantations on the cheap, to your detriment. And none of this speaks to the likelihood of desperate and destroyed human debris getting dumped from this debilitating program back into your neighborhood with no opportunities and absolutely no tools for developing healthy relationships. We're not dealing with a system here that fails to rehabilitate 90% of the time, creating future crime and victimization. We're dealing with a system that works as designed, manufacturing crime and suffering, creating an industry of crime and crime response, a system that sees you and your well-being as collateral damage. We're not safer because prison mismanagers lock up prisoners. We're less safe because prison mismanagers destroy and mangle human beings and then set them loose. On top of all that, the militarized police force is a projection of the looming threat that you too can be scooped up and destroyed for decades directly. And that looming threat serves to maintain the current status quo. It's a no-brainer that the prison complex is an integral component to the fascist police state keeping you unfree. So that being the case, a challenge to this control complex is pregnant with the potential for radically altering the government's capacity to maintain all of the consequences just listed. It all goes together. The planned work stoppage on September 9th doesn't seek better food or pizza parties for coddled criminals. It seeks to change the world you and I both live in. It seeks to empower the powerless to at least imagine the future we deserve.
This call is originating from an Ohio correctional facility and may be recorded and monitored.
It seeks to empower the powerless to at least imagine the future we deserve and to inspire the belief that we can do something about it. Look, you can join the struggle against the terror state when it is still disorganized and casualties will be few. Or you can wait. You can wait and join the struggle against the terror state when its powers are established and casualties will be greater. Or you can wait again. You can join the struggle against the terror state when victory will be very hard and casualties will be great. Or you can continue to wait. You can join the struggle against the terror state when victory will be dubious and the struggle feels hopeless. Or, yet again, you can wait. You can wait and join the struggle against the terror state when there is no hope of victory and you only fight because it is better to fight and to die than to live as a slave. The choice is yours. Some choose to fight now. I make this statement in full knowledge that having said what I've said, I might never be heard from again. Well, unless we take this motherfucker down. So look, I'm not going to tell you that if you opt out of this pivotal stand against our common enemy and it fails, that our children or our grandchildren will look back at this crucial moment and pity us for our cowardice and our inaction, that they will lament the intolerable existence under fascism to which we doomed them. No, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that if we don't act now, and if we don't succeed, our children or our grandchildren will live so unfree, they'll sit in regimented rows in their classroom, wearing uniforms and armbands, and the teacher will swap the blackboard with a horse crop to draw their attention to the message written there. It has always been this way. And it will be as if this moment never existed. Only one thing stands between us and that dystopian future. You. This is anarchist prisoner Sean Swain at the Warren Correctional Institution in Lebanon, Ohio. If you're listening, you are the resistance.
You can write to Sean Swain at Sean Swain, 243-205, Warren, C.I., P.O. Box 120, 5787 State Route 63, Lebanon, Ohio, 45036. For updates on his situation, his bid for U.S. president in 2016, and more writings by Sean can be found at seanswain.org.
All right, and you're listening to CPR here on CFRC. That's our prison radio show, which airs every Wednesday from 7 to 8 p.m. And that was a really great piece by Sean Swain there. I mean, we were both laughing at the turns of phrase, and his analysis is really solid.
Yeah, he's a great writer.
Yeah, so where were we getting that from? So that was phoning in from an Ohio State prison.
Yes. And that's distributed by the Final Straw radio show in Asheville, North Carolina.
Yeah. We heard some stuff from them a few weeks ago relating to the same subject. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So
I really like how he connects sort of the repression and surveillance in society as prisons as experiments for, you know, more generalized surveillance.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to bring it to you rather than you having to go into it anymore. So, you know, we were talking a little bit off air that for some of you listening, this may be a surprise or a shock that this event is happening. But in fact, there's been a lot of activity and actions occurring over the last few months in the lead up to the September 9th strike. And I think, Rico, you're going to mention a few of them.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of this is sort of published online at the itsgoingdown.org website. But there have been, you know, a lot of activities on the outside to try to prepare and sort of hype up the strike on September 9th, whether that's banner drops or graffiti campaigns or noise demonstrations where people go to a jail or a prison, make a bunch of noise, just all these kinds of smaller actions to try to draw attention that this is going to happen, to let people know so that they can get organized. And to really, I think, make September 9th a historic day. People really do seem to be putting their stock in that. Yeah. So I'm inspired by that and really hope it shapes up to be what people are hoping it's going to be.
Yeah, it's ambitious, but again, like Sean said, you know, why not fight now and demand the impossible? There's nothing else to do. We're going to go to a song here for a little bit. We're going to hear some new music by MIA from her new record, which is AIM. And we're going to hear Platforms, and then we've got more content that Rico's brought in. So again, you're listening to CPR here on CFRC 101.9 FM. We'll have an archive of this on cfrc.ca. We're hoping to start archiving on our website soon. And if you'd like to write to us all and get a hold of us, I'll repeat all that information at the end of the show. So stay tuned and enjoy.
Neon lights on the dust in the ground on the bus. Dirty words makes the sky prep a must. Rolling by, scrolling for the future on the up. Dating my mind, it's a diamond in the rough. A platform with a train of gold. Getting to the right side of me is why I fall. I'm gonna say, what else have I got? Maybe there's glory in all the things I'm not.
Some new music from MIA here on CPR. It's the acronym hour at CFRC. And we are continuing our broadcast to raise some awareness on our end here in Kingston about the September 9th, the start of this indefinite strike to end prison slavery now, finally, after how many centuries. We've got another piece we're going to air right now that Rico has brought in. Let's set the stage for that one.
Yeah, so this is a poem called For September 9th, so that's pretty self-explanatory, written and performed by Ben Turk, who is a prison abolition activist. I don't know, I think he'd be okay with that description, out of Ohio, and part of the Insurgent Theater Group, which is a group that... it's a theater troupe, basically, that tours subversive plays and things like that. So this is a piece by him. I should warn our listeners that there is some profanity in this piece. So if you don't want to hear that, you should tune out for the next 8.5 minutes. There's not a lot, but there is some.
All right. Well, and if you're staying tuned, please enjoy this here on CFRC 101.9 FM.
If there is not a fire burning in your heart that longs to spread to every prison, emptying them out, reducing them to ash and rubble, then you don't know what world you are living in. You don't know control unit suicides. Humans reduced to hands full of pills, to hands displaying makeshift razors through narrow reinforced windows, begging to have the master's tools taken away from them, begging the COs to save them from what the COs have made them. The shit-smeared razor cuts, bedsheet nooses, confined conflagrations, legal briefs, and case law stacked knee-high on the concrete is at least flammable. If nothing else, these papers could go up in a relieving blaze, finally serving the pursuit of freedom they so long promised but withheld. Immolation is another way to end suffering. When it happens, whether by noose or knife, by pills or by fire, an alarm goes up. The emergency call buttons don't work, never worked, so everyone kicks their doors and shouts, man down, save our souls. But the COs come slow, and they shrug. There's nothing unexpected about a person ending a life of torture. If there is not a fire smoldering under wet blankets you've carefully arranged to get through your days, but unextinguishable, reignited with each salvo of bullets tearing through black flesh on your computer screen, reignited by the dark eyes on a mugshot of an 18-year-old who hung herself in solitary, if that fire doesn't threaten your life every day, then you and I must live in different worlds. But if there is a fire burning in your chest as in mine, smothered but burning, soaked with a deluge of your tears but burning, stamped and pummeled to oblivion but burning, wished and prayed and begged out but raging still, that fire doesn't need to smolder there. Doesn't need to choke you with its slow curls of noxious smoke, of hopeless endeavors, of shrugging shoulders, reconciled to defeat. You can open your heart and spill your angry flames into the world. It is a fragile world, standing heavy on unstable history, flammable as a house of paper. This world is nothing other than paper and us. It works through us, having no power other than us. It sets us against us, gets us burning our own selves up, and it will burn you up until you learn to blow it back. To open up your blast furnace, spewing embers and sparks, tongues of flame, billowing smoke, a moving wall of intolerable heat. Be less afraid, because an enemy cowardly enough to shoot black men dead this often is weak. An enemy who cannot hold a precious human without breaking, torturing, driving her into ever smaller boxes until she turns up dead in one of them is utterly without defense.
Okay, that's part of a great poem called For September 9th by the Insurgent Theater. Who is the specific poet again?
Ben Turk.
Ben Turk. Man, yeah, that's intense. We're running really quickly to the end of the hour here, and we have one last piece that we really want to get out there because it's a great interview that you managed to capture for us, Rico. Do we need to set it up, or is it kind of introduced in the interview itself?
I'll give it a quick setup.
Sure.
Basically, I was in Providence, Rhode Island last weekend and was able to catch up with an organizer with the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee, the Industrial Workers of the World, and the Black Rose Anarchist Federation, who is organizing actively to prepare for the strike on Friday. So we sat down and I asked him a little bit about what's going to happen and what's sort of the background to this strike.
Okay. You're listening to CPR. We'll jump on after this really, really quickly. Enjoy.
Yeah, so the strike that's coming up on September 9th is a national call-out. It's a strike that was called for by people on the inside initially to commemorate the uprising in Attica about 45 years ago, but also to call for a new direction in the prison movement of emphasizing self-organization and direct action and unity across the U.S., at least, to attack the prison industry and to call for an end to prison slavery altogether.
Can you maybe put that into context, why people are using that terminology?
Yeah, so the reason why the language of slavery is being used is because there is an ongoing character to the slavery that goes on within the U.S. The 13th Amendment, which was supposed to bring an end to slavery, plantation-based slavery, actually reshifted the category of who can become a slave and stated that if you are convicted for a crime, you are able to be made a slave of the state. And so this is codified within the law of the U.S. And so this is kind of really the foundation, the legal foundation that prisons have to incarcerating people at the rate that they do and keeping them there, not only to work, but also to keep them in a certain status of former prisoner so as to make it easier for them to go back into prison. So this is why the language of slavery is being used.
And who initiated sort of the call out? Like, where did the call out come from and how has it spread from that point?
Well, the call out did come from members of the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee. And those are people on the inside who are also affiliated with other organizations such as Free Alabama Movement, the Free Texas Movement, Free Virginia Movement, the New Underground Railroad Movement. There's various organizations that have been active in articulating the call for the strike. So from there on, it's been endorsed by organizations such as the National Lawyers Guild, such as the Jericho Movement to Free All Political Prisoners, and other organizations that work with prison abolitionists, but not only, as well as families and other people on the inside.
So one issue that people run into in Canada a lot is the ability to communicate and coordinate between prisons is really restricted, and that kind of communication is heavily censored. So in terms of prisoners organizing themselves in the U.S., if those same obstacles exist, how do they overcome those obstacles, and what are some ways that people use to coordinate actions and do things sort of in harmony with each other?
One of the main reasons why the IWOC not only organizes inside but also has chapters on the inside is because it's kind of like organizing an outside, inside-outside strategy. And we do have similar barriers here in the U.S. as in Canada when it comes to people who are incarcerated not able to communicate with one another directly in terms of correspondence, for example. And so the role of the outside chapters and comrades on the outside is to help move along that information from facility to facility, from state to state, and so on and so forth. And so that's one of the main ways that information has been spread out. And of course, people on the inside have their methods of getting in contact with one another. I know that there have been people who have been making use of social media while on the inside and producing videos so as to call attention to the conditions on the inside. And now the question, if other people on the inside also see that, well, I mean, if one person at least has a cell phone to get onto the internet and record themselves, we can also assume that other people have, you know, means of communication as well.
Is it an indefinite strike that's being called for?
When it comes to the length, September 9th is just the beginning. I don't know that I've seen the language of indefinite strike being used, but I know I also haven't seen a date for an end to the strike. Us on the outside, you know, we have to not only be ready to match the level of escalation that people on the inside are initiating, but also being ready to be active in pushing back against repression that people on the inside are going to be receiving, as well as us on the outside. In terms of length, we should be prepared for a long-haul struggle. When it comes to demands, I know that there have been demands, for example, in the Texas strike that occurred. They've called for a match to a minimum wage on the outside, one of the main tactics that's going to be used is the labor strike, but also a refusal to buy anything from commissary, for example. When it comes to the labor strike itself, you know, they're obviously protesting and denouncing the fact that they receive nothing for their labor, while these corporations who benefit from prison labor and the prisons themselves also make a lot of money, but they're extending it further and calling into question why they're on the inside to begin with.
When people are talking about prison labor as a legacy of slavery, are they only talking about for-profit, private, corporate kind of contracts, or are they talking about the entire system, including the sort of public works projects that are happening within the institutions?
I would say that there's a focus certainly on both forms of prison, or the multiple forms of prison, because there is the private sector, you know, the GEO group, the CCA, but that doesn't account for all of the prisons, you know, that exist within the U.S., which mostly are 97%, if I'm not mistaken, are mostly publicly run prisons. And those publicly run prisons still do run for profit. So they are publicly owned and they're publicly run, whatever that means. And the labor that's being forced in there is being used for the profit of the state and for other corporations as well. It's kind of used different levels of distribution or something like that to kind of like distance themselves from the fact that products are being made by people who are in public prisons.
In Canada, like there's fewer private sector contracts. There's a greater share of work that's being done to, say, build furniture for the government or repair military vehicles or all these things that are saving the state money and contributing to the sort of the functioning of the state or whatever at an exploited, extremely exploited level. And when we talk about like the prison industrial complex, we absolutely include, like in our context, we absolutely include like government contracts alongside roasting coffee or whatever.
Yeah, that's why we should certainly, I guess, celebrate the recent, you know, ending of contracts with private prisons at the federal level, for example. But we shouldn't get caught up in only, you know, thinking that it's occurring within, you know, the private sector. The timing of that move, policy move, is also really interesting. But nonetheless, I mean, the focus, I think, should be, as you're saying, ending the prison system altogether and calling all that into question.
So could you tell us a bit about the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee?
The Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee was born, I think, in 2013. And it's a project of the industrial workers of the world. Something that is a project that was founded specifically kind of like at the request of the Free Alabama movement, who initiated this strategy of calling for work stoppages within the prison. And so from their efforts to reach out to other people in the Midwest and unions altogether and other groups, out of those conversations and efforts is where IWOC was born. Within the IWW, the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee, they do exist as an industrial union. That means that people on the inside are forming branches and organizing themselves. And so, you know, there's a clear emphasis on the self-organization of incarcerated workers and solidarity from people who are on the outside. It's certainly a self-organized initiative and one that hasn't attempted to gain recognition from the state. I know there was a battle, I think in the early 90s in Ohio, around prisoners wanting to form a union. And actually at that time it was the IWW as well, as a matter of fact, way before IWOC. And I think that came into like a legal battle. Technically, a union is a concerted effort between two or more workers. And so we don't need the state to really recognize that.
In Canada, on the West Coast in BC, there was an attempt some years ago to form a labor union as well in one of the prisons. Corrections Canada refused to recognize it. And they did go to court and they lost, basically on the grounds that the courts were calling labor in prison programs as opposed to work, so like therefore exempt from labor law. So it's, you know, it's interesting to me that this idea that we don't need legal recognition to organize ourselves and to move forward. A lot of people feel a need that they need legal recognition in order to, like, do something. And so it's always inspiring to me when people just go ahead and do it without permission. And in many ways, I think there's, like, more potential in that.
Yeah, no doubt. And that's, you know, that's something that we value as an organization as well as a union. You know, an emphasis on we don't need the state recognition or the boss's recognition to actually be active as a union. And, you know, those are things that are foundational principles and that do distinguish us from other, you know, labor organizations.
And with IWOC, like, how do you make decisions when people are not allowed to sit in a room together? And
from what I know that there is, like, a national committee that helps move all of the work along. And the people that are elected to the committee are people who are formerly incarcerated, as well as other IWW members. And so, you know, there are efforts to define, you know, how to actually make those types of decisions. Mm-hmm. But, you know, things are voted for by the membership mainly. And I guess when there isn't that, when there is a sense of urgency, we kind of have to, like, trust our instincts when it comes to, like, our relationships with people on the inside and be knowledgeable about, like, okay, how might this affect those that are fighting on the inside or organizing or anything like that. Compare that to, you know, should we actually wait to refer to a broader body of people? So obviously the tendency is towards having the broader body make those decisions, but as far as I know, it's the national committee that makes those decisions in moments when things are immediate, for example.
So what is this organizing in Providence look like?
My sense of where we're at in Providence is we've been reaching out to people at the state prison. In Rhode Island, there's only one state prison. Well, there's various facilities, but they're all congregated within one territory, for example. And that's the public state prison. And then there's also the federal detention center. We've been mainly reaching out to people on the inside, sending them information about IWOC, and more recently, September 9th, to see if anybody is interested. And that's been mainly our form of activity, creating a database of people who we've reached out to, who we still have to reach out to. And, you know, we're moving in a direction where we're reaching out to people who are family of incarcerated and inviting them to regular letter writing nights. And that's something that we've been hosting for the past several months at this point. We also have listings of political prisoners so that people can write to people who have been on the inside for political action specifically. I feel that we're still at an embryonic stage, kind of like, you know, developing ourselves.
Do you have public events or any actions planned for the 9th?
Yeah, definitely. So on September 9th itself, we're holding a solidarity action at 6 p.m. in downtown Providence in Kennedy Plaza. And the goal of that is to not simply bring awareness to, but, like, to take action against corporations who benefit off of prison labor. We encourage people to turn out that day, and we're also planning for a noise demonstration on September 10th outside of the ACI so as to get, you know, give the people inside a morale boost and, you know, help spread the strike and information about the strike and the project itself.
Assuming that people in the Kingston area and or upstate New York are listening to this radio show, what are some of the things that you'd want people to know and to be thinking about? They're hearing about this for the first time. You know, in 2 days, it can be pretty hard to organize, maybe to go on strike yourself. But what are some other ways that people could, you know, stay connected to what's going on, show support, get involved, whatever that looks like?
Yeah, I would encourage folks, if you're just hearing about this, to learn more about, you know, what's going on, and also get active in terms of helping spread the strike and generalize it. You know, the prison is not only the prison in the building And the facilities, but it's also the society that maintains the prison altogether. So, for example, in the U.S., we have the school-to-prison pipeline where police criminalize young students and push them closer into the criminal justice system. So thinking in that context, if you're a student or if you're a teacher or any other education worker, you know, how can you take action against the ways in which people are pushed into prison in the site that you're located in? And that not only goes to education workers, but, you know, in the U.S., we're also seeing an increasing criminalization, close relationship between the medical industry and, you know, security forces. So those are the types of things, you know, if you're a healthcare worker, how can you address situations in which people are being further criminalized? Attacking the prison industry, not only at the prison and its location, but also spreading action against the prison industry in our regular lives. So that's what I would encourage people to do. Take action around how the prison manifests itself around where you are at. And if you're on the inside, you know, there is certainly an encouragement for you to get in contact with, you know, the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee if you're interested at all in setting up a branch or learning more about the project or even just receiving our quarterly newsletters. We encourage people to get in contact with the Incarcerated Organizing Committee. I know that there's a chapter in upstate New York, in Rochester. For those of you in Canada, we're definitely, you know, welcome to hearing from people outside of the U.S. so that we can support you guys starting anything in Canada. Yeah, this is a struggle not only against prison labor, but the prison society that maintains it. And so we have to not only support the people fighting on the inside, but recognize that there's a lot of caring labor that goes into this. And we have to take care of one another and be ready to defend those fighting on the inside and to take action on the outside and support the family of those who are being held in bondage. We can see and understand the strike in relation to what's going on in other sectors of the society outside of the prison is police violence. You know, police are one of the first lines of criminalization and incarceration. And so, you know, it would be worth us making more concrete connections between actions against police violence on the outside and the growing movements such as Black Lives Matter and, you know, find ways to weave that work together with the prison movement that's growing against prison labor and prison slavery altogether. So that's certainly something that, you know, would be really powerful to forge.
If you do want to write the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee, you can write them at IWOC, P.O. Box 414304, Kansas City, Missouri, United States, zip code 64141. Or you can email them at IWOC@riseup.net. You can find them on Facebook and Twitter, and their website is iwoc.noblogs.org. And thanks very much to Servio for talking with me.
Yeah, so that was really great. We're going over a little bit just so we can get out a couple of other links to some of the struggles we've been talking about. So if you want to learn more about the September 9th strike and what this is about, support prisoner resistance, noblogs.org, iwalk.noblogs.org, freealabamamovement.com are also great places and source information. We might do more about this next week on the show because there's obviously more content that we could run out of an hour of it. And CPR, if you want to get a hold of us, write to us, CPR Calls from Home, care of CFRC. We're in Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's University campus, Kingston, Ontario. K is in Kareem, 7, L is in Leonard, 3, N is in Nancy, 6, K, 7, L, 3, N, 6. Email us at CFRC Prison Radio at riseup.net. Check out our Facebook group, Calls From Home, or phone the station, 533-2121, and leave a message. This has been CPR. Thank you, Rico, for coming down. I hope to hear your voice on here more. I'm C, and this is us signing off for today. We have some great world music coming at you from CKUT in Montreal, sending it to CFRC here in Kingston. Have a good night.
Good night.